Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I will be reading the Bloomington Normal pantograph dated Tuesday, March the 21st. Let's begin on the front page. Gridley Mann's lifelong passion behind scenes, 67-year tenure in production, support unbroken with play. You just can't keep a good man down to earth, especially if it's Gridley's Donald G. Anderson, during the Easter season. The 90-year-old will be rising to the occasion, literally as he has for 67 years, when the American Passion Play returns Saturday to the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. For each of the 3.5-hour performances through April 22nd, Anderson will be perched on high in the BCPA rafters. There, he'll be manning one of two fly lofts located on either stage wing, helping to maneuver the ropes that lower and raise the play's dizzying procession of 50 scenic backdrops. No fear of heights, no, he assures, when asked about life in the air way up there. Until the special effect was dropped for the technical risks involved, Anderson also helped fly an angel, played by his daughter Gail, who descended from on high for one scene. And he had a literal hand for several seasons in another of the play's aerial effects, the climactic heavenward ascension of the Christ. At 90, Anderson is just 4 years younger than the 94-season-old play itself, one of the two or three longest continuously running passion plays in America. He assures anyone concerned about the flight up the 60 to 70 steps to the rafters that he is still willing and able to make, even if it gets a little harder every year. I just take them steps a little slower now and stop to catch my breath a few times. Don's in excellent health for a gentleman of his years, confirms longtime fellow passion player Tina Fowler, the production's ticket coordinator and administrative assistant, who's been part of the play since age 12 in the mid-60s. Don loves doing what he does. He's dedicated. He's reliable. He'll do whatever he's asked, she adds. At a friend's urging, Anderson, who grew up on a farm south of Bloomington, joined the consistory in 1949. Then another fella I worked with talked me into becoming part of the passion play, he said. That was 1950, when Anderson was all of 23. For his debut, he joined the mob. No, not that mob, the multitudes of the mob, he notes, of the first of his several large group roles over the decades. Though Wings, both stage and angelic, would come down to dominate his passion play run, Anderson's backstage role began in makeup, with the beards, he reveals, fluffing them up and putting them on the disciples and the multitudes. Since there is no shortage of disciples and multitudes and other players in the cast, there's a lot of facial hair to be fluffed and applied. At one point, around 40 years ago, one of his play colleagues, working the fly lofts, invited him to come on up, a request that altered his course with the production ever after. With 50 backdrops to be lowered and raised over the course of the production, there's never a dull moment, he says. The least dull came the year that daughter Gail's airborne, about 8 feet off the stage floor, angel roll led to a heart-stopping moment when the guy doing it brought her in too fast and she hit the floor. It was a rough landing. Luckily, she was uninjured. The show went on, and being young, she wanted to keep on doing it, which she did. But with Dad at the wire controls for the remaining years of her angelic career. The scene, which came at the conclusion of the A Garden of Gethsemane scene, is no longer in the play. They realized it's a kind of a dangerous thing to do, says Anderson. Over the years, the remainder of the Anderson clan, wife Kay, youngest daughter Marcia, and son David, have all put in their passion play time, too. But it's Dad whose unbroken tenure is bound for the record books. I never dreamed I'd be doing it so long, he said, of that first time out in 1950 when Harry S. Truman was president and Sunset Boulevard and All About Eve were in the movie theaters. Don's just a huge joy to work with and such an asset to the play, says Fowler. It's the camaraderie, he concludes. Everybody works together, nobody's the star, it's like a family. And as long as I'm able, I'll be part of it. Twin City officials prep for One Voice, Leader's Eye, first trip to D.C. under Trump. Local officials hope a trip to Washington, D.C. this week will help them figure out how best to get assistance from the federal government under President Donald Trump. This is a unique year. We have a new president who is, 2 months in, trying to get his feet in the water, said Kyle Ham, CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council. We're very focused on where this new administration is going. 36 local officials will be in the nation's capital Wednesday through Friday for One Voice, an annual trip that allows them to promote Bloomington Normal's priorities to federal agencies and officials. Attendees include Ham, Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner, Ward 4 Alderman Amelia Baragas, City Manager David Hales, Bloomington Economic Development Coordinator Austin Grammer, Normal Mayor Chris Coos, Council Member Kathleen Lorenz, Children's Discovery Museum Executive Director Sheila Burlingmar, and McLean County Board Chairman John McIntyre and members Chuck Erickson, Carlo Robustelli, and Dave Seltzer. Bloomington plans to use the trip to seek federal money for two major road projects, a Hamilton Road project extension from Bunn Street to Commerce Parkway, and widening and upgrading Main Street, U.S. Business 51 between Olive Street at the southern edge of downtown and College Avenue in Normal. The town will be doing some fact-finding, Koo said, about federal funding for the railroad crossing at Uptown Station currently under study. Under President Barack Obama, local officials stumped for Tiger and Fast Lane grants that helped build Uptown Station, but they may no longer exist. Whatever they are called under the new administration, we want to find out what way we can get assistance, said Renner. Trump did claim he wanted to put a lot of money into infrastructure. The group also will speak to congressional representatives, including Democratic Senators Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin, and Republican Reps Rodney Davis of Taylorville and Darren LaHood of Dunlap, about continuing to have soccer fields on property at the Central Illinois Regional Airport. The Federal Aviation Administration requested the fields close at the end of 2017 due to safety issues, but officials haven't agreed on a replacement. Bloomington officials have balked at funding a sports complex, including soccer, estimated at $16 million. We'll probably talk most directly with Rodney Davis's staff because he is on a committee that deals with the FAA, Renner said. We'll probably ask for several years. They might give us 1, 2, or 3 years if they give us anything. County officials hope to use the trip to pursue mental health changes, said County Administrator Bill Wasson. No specific grant opportunity on this trip, he said. They're going to go to the Department of Justice to talk about some initiatives that relate to mental health and super utilizers in the criminal justice system. Other efforts to be discussed include the EDC's STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math project with local businesses and schools, the McLean County Chamber of Commerce's Workforce Initiative, and a McLean County Museum of History exhibit on the history of labor in the area. The group also has scheduled meetings with officials at the Departments of Labor and Transportation, Ham said. Coos and Renner agreed the trip will be collegial, despite recent tensions between Bloomington and Normal over the Metro Zone Agreement. The Bloomington City Council voted to end the tax-sharing agreement, which benefits Normal by $1.2 million per year. But town officials have asked to continue negotiating a replacement. Normal passes looser comment policy. Residents ask council for changes regarding agenda addresses. Speakers may now address the Normal City Council and other town boards as often as they like. That's among several changes in a new comment policy approved by the Council on Monday, 4 days after an Illinois Attorney General's office ruling that the town violated the Open Meetings Act by barring speakers from appearing more than once every 45 days. The new policy also lets a speaker have 3 minutes per meeting, and each meeting have a maximum of 20 minutes of comments. The previous rules allowed each speaker 2 minutes for a total of 10 minutes of comments per meeting. Several other current restrictions on comments, including comments must be related to an agenda item, and speakers must notify the town of their intent to speak at least 2 hours before the meeting, will stay in place, despite recommendations from the AG's office and the public to change some of them. Resident Craig Stimpert, who requested the AG's office review the town's comment policy, objected to the town ignoring its advice. "I utterly reject the premise that a more lenient public comment policy will result in more disrespectful and unproductive public discourse. I think more highly of the people of the town of Normal than that," said Stimpert. "I encourage council to reject tonight's ordinance and draft a new one that is less restrictive and collaborate with citizens of this town to form it." Council member Kevin McCarthy rejected the idea that the town didn't work with citizens to change the policy. "We're changing these rules precisely because there's been public input," he said. "This has been a very public, engaged process." Mark Tiritilli, a resident who is challenging Mayor Chris Coos for the town's top office in the April 4th election, singled out the rule restricting speakers to addressing agenda items. He noted the public comments that brought about Monday's changes were made during meetings when the comment policy was not on the agenda, so speakers violated the agenda rule to ask for a change. "The public should be free to address things that might be in the news at the time," he said. "I really welcome a more open public comment policy." Council member Jeff Fritzen noted the 2-hour requirement means the public must register to speak before 5 p.m. when City Hall closes anyway. "I don't think it's unreasonable for people to ask during regular business hours to be recognized," he said. Corporation Counsel Brian Day noted one part of the policy that the AG objected to, asking speakers to state their address before speaking, is not in the ordinance and only on the town website. Officials defended the language on the site, which says speakers should give an address, as meaning it's not required. Coos verbally asks every speaker specifically to state their name and address before addressing the council. Council member R.C. McBride, who once chaired the town's planning commission, noted that the address policy sometimes helps that board figure out what stake a resident has in a possible planning change. "There are people with similar names, and to try to differentiate one from another, an address is a way to help us do that," said Fritzen. Councilmember Kathleen Lorenz reiterated what she said about the 45-day rule previously. "Public comment is not the only way for residents to communicate with the council. Others include by phone, email, social media, and in-person meeting." Lorenz said that she hopes the town can allay some fears about limited comments by hosting more Coffee with the Council events. That program, resurrected last week, saw Lorenz and McBride take time Saturday morning to meet with 9 constituents in a public venue. Daily Digest. ISU band wins Ireland competition. Illinois State University's Big Red Marching Machine was named Best Overall Band in the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Dublin, Ireland, and was overall winner of the 47th Limerick International Band Competition. The Limerick competition on Sunday included 1,000 musicians from 17 bands from several countries. The ISU contingent included about 175 band members. The Limerick Leader newspaper quoted the band's musical director, Gavin Smith, as saying, "I'm in a bit of a shock right now. It was a good experience for everyone. The trip over here, everyone was so great. All the other ensembles were fantastic. It's not about winning and losing, it's about the experience coming over to a new culture and a new society. Road closures. Until further notice, Front Street between Lowe and Allen Streets is closed to all traffic while crews complete sewer repairs in the area. Also, Mulberry Street between Mason and Oak Streets is closed until further notice for street repairs. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, March 21st, the 80th day of 2017. There are 285 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On March 21st, 1952, the Moondog Coronation Ball, considered the first rock and roll concert, took place at Cleveland Arena. On this date, in 1556, Thomas Cranmer, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, was burned at the stake for heresy. In 1685, composer Johann Sebastian Bach was born in Eisenach, Germany. In 1957, President Dwight D. Eisenhower and British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan began a four-day conference in Bermuda. In 1963, the Alcatraz Federal Prison Island in San Francisco Bay was emptied of its last inmates and closed at the order of Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy. In 1981, Michael Donald, a black teenager in Mobile, Alabama, was abducted, tortured, and killed by members of the Ku Klux Klan. A lawsuit brought by Donald's mother, Beulah May Donald, later resulted in a landmark judgment that bankrupted one Klan organization. In 2006, the social media website Twitter was established with the sending of the first tweet by co-founder Jack Dorsey, who wrote, "Just setting up my Twitter." Thought for the day. History is principally the inaccurate narration of events which ought not to have happened. Written by Ernest Albert Houghton, American anthropologist, 1887 to 1954. BPD, two hurt by gunfire. Officials eye shooting in motel parking lot. Todd Drive incident. Bloomington police are asking for the public's help in the investigation of a shooting that left two people injured at a motel parking lot over the weekend. Police say around 3 a.m. Saturday, officers were called to Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal for a report of two people shot. Officers found a 27-year-old man with a gunshot wound to the leg and another man, 25, with a gunshot wound to the head. The injuries are not believed to be life-threatening, police said. The investigation determined the shooting took place in the parking lot of the Econo Lodge at 401 Brock Drive on the city's west side. Police were told there was a crowd of people in the parking lot when an argument started prior to the shooting. No arrest had been made as of Monday afternoon. In another incident, Bloomington police said two vehicles were struck by bullets in the 2200 block of Todd Drive early Monday morning. No injuries were reported in the incident that was reported around 6 a.m. There have been no arrests. That investigation also is ongoing, police said. Anyone with information about either case is asked to contact the BPD. Detective Steve Moreland at 309-434-2359 or at the website smoreland@cityblm.org. Rather, that is his email. If you wish to remain anonymous, you can call McLean County Crime Stoppers at 309-828-1111. If your call leads to the arrest and indictment of suspects, you may be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000. Some lift limitations after flu cases drop, area hospitals and visitor restrictions. A dramatic drop in influenza in McLean, Livingston, Woodford, and DeWitt counties has prompted hospitals in Bloomington Normal, Pontiac, Eureka, and Clinton to end voluntary visitor restrictions. But hospitals in Lincoln, Hopedale, and Ottawa, and an outpatient center in Streeter continue visitor restrictions. We started seeing a consistent and dramatic drop in patients with influenza-like illness, said Pam Bierbaum, Infection Prevention and Control Coordinator at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal. Numbers also have been declining at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington, said St. Joseph Infection Preventionist Joanne Guyman. While she did not have countywide numbers, she said, "Our numbers are a good representation of what's happening in the community." In January, Broman was averaging 10 to 15 positive flu tests each week among inpatients and ER patients, she said. In February, there was a huge surge to 40 a week, she said. That's when Broman St. Joseph Advocate Eureka Hospital in Eureka and OSF St. James John W. Albrecht Medical Center in Pontiac began requesting that children, teenagers, and people who are not feeling well stay away, and that no more than two people visit a patient at any one time. In the past 3 weeks, Broman has averaged fewer than 10 cases of influenza among inpatients and ER patients each week, Biermom said. Meanwhile, at St. Joseph, only three patients have tested positive for flu in the emergency department in the past week, and only one flu patient has been admitted in March, Guyman said. So, Broman, St. Joseph, Eureka, and St. James have ended their visitor restrictions. Meanwhile, Warner Hospital and Health Services in Clinton lifted its visitor restrictions, which had been in place since January. On Monday, after a reduction in flu activity, CEO Paul Scourin said, "Even though true influenza is on the decline, there's still a lot of upper respiratory illnesses out there," Biermom warned. Tips that apply to reducing the risk of flu, such as washing hands thoroughly and frequently, cleaning highly touched surfaces, sneezing and coughing into your sleeve, and staying home when you're sick, also apply to reducing the risk of other upper respiratory illnesses and should be followed, she said. Individuals who are feeling ill or exhibiting symptoms of any contagious illness should refrain from visiting hospital patients in person and call instead, said Eureka infection preventionist Katie Jeffries. Even though flu activity has declined, visitor restrictions remained at Abraham Lincoln Memorial Hospital in Lincoln and Hopedale Medical Complex in Hopedale. At OSF Center for Health Streeter and OSF St. Elizabeth Medical Center in Ottawa, visitor restrictions remain because of continued flu activity, Infection Control Coordinator Susan Smith said. State Senator Biss to run for Illinois Governor. State Senator Daniel Biss visited Normal, announcing Monday that he is running for Illinois Governor in 2018, joining a growing field of Democrats hoping to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. He visited the Normal Public Library as a guest of the Illinois State University College Democrats. "There is this sentiment downstate that Illinois is run by Chicago politics," said Austin Cullinan, a spokesman for the ISU College Democrats. "The fact that he is willing to come here for his first campaign stop speaks volumes about what he is trying to accomplish." The former University of Chicago math professor from Evanston said during an announcement streamed live via Facebook Monday morning that it's time to take the state back from special interests that have controlled both parties. "People across our state are hurting because of the nightmare of the last 2 years caused by Bruce Rauner," Biss said, while seated in a Chicago office. "In Illinois, billionaires and machine politicians have a monopoly on political power. Several other Democrats already are vying to take on Rauner. Those who have already announced bids are businessman Chris Kennedy, the nephew of former President John F. Kennedy, Chicago Alderman Amaya Pawar, Regional School Superintendent Bob Diber, and small business owner Alex Pedarakis." Billionaire businessman J.B. Pritzker said last week that he has formed a campaign committee to explore a bid and was contributing $200,000 to fund its day-to-day operations. "What I like about Dan is that he is a strong, progressive Democrat, and at the same time, he is very rational," Cullinan said. He doesn't dive into the mudslinging. He understands that both Democrats and the Republicans have built this mess in Springfield, and we need someone who can rise above the partisan muckraking to come up with viable solutions. Biss said that he chose the format so that he could speak one-on-one with voters and answer their questions, calling it the start of a movement of the people. He used the discussion to call for an end to Illinois' nearly 2-year state budget stalemate, better investment in schools and communities, and a graduated income tax in which the highest earners pay a larger percentage of their income. Biss, who graduated from Harvard University and earned a Ph.D. from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, served one term in the Illinois House before he was elected to the Senate in 2012. He considered a bid for comptroller last year, but later bowed out. He was among the harshest critics of Rauner and other Republicans during the 2016 campaign, creating a federal super PAC that spent millions on TV ads linking the governor to then-presidential candidate Donald Trump. The ads featured actors resembling Trump and Rauner in various scenes, including one in which they dined together, then stuck regular people with their bill. Town attorney slams AG vote. Normal's day says regulating public commenting okay. The day after the Illinois Attorney General's office told the town of Normal its public comment policy is illegal, the town fired back. In a letter written for but not sent to Deputy Public Access Counselor Neil Olson, Normal Corporation Counsel Brian Day ripped into the decision, which he said goes well beyond what's established in statute and previous legal cases. The letter was sent to local news sources, including the Pantograph. Day spoke for several minutes about Olson's non-binding opinion during Monday's Normal City Council meeting as well, calling it pretty inadequate. The town believes that the public access counselor has overstepped its bounds, and the town plans to continue to regulate public comment at its meetings in a way that is legal and appropriate under the Open Meetings Act, Day wrote. Olson wrote Thursday that the town should change its comment policy because a rule limiting speakers to one appearance every 45 days violates the act, and the town removed that rule, among others, on Monday. Olson went on, however, to suggest the town move two other rules that Day defended, requiring speakers to address only agenda items and to notify the town of their intent to speak 2 hours before a public meeting. Courts have consistently and repeatedly held that comments at public meetings may be restricted over issues of germaneness and relevancy, Day wrote. A city council meeting is there to conduct public business. It is not open mic night. Olson said the policy is unfair because the council faces no similar restraint, but does not explain why this might violate some comment right, Day said. Of notification, Day wrote, this requirement is clearly a time, place, and manner restriction, and it advances the judicially recognized significant government interest of conducting the public business at the meeting, so there is nothing that should prohibit any such rule. Day said that he's very familiar with the limits of the law because he helped craft it as a lobbyist for the Illinois Municipal League. Exactly the reason that we were making this amendment was to make sure public bodies had broad authority to pass the rules on public comment. He said, this idea, it means something else outside what the statute is simply wrong, Day said Monday. The letter was never sent because he considers the matter closed. He said the town has solid legal footing in a possible challenge, however. Area calendar. The League of Women Voters of McLean County WGLT Candidate Forum will be held at 6 p.m. at the IS University Galleries in Uptown Normal with Normal Council candidates. We've come to the end now of the first half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.